Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. I'm Ed Vitagliano, sitting in for Tim Wildman today. As far as I know, the president of AFA and AFR will be back in the captain's chair tomorrow. And I am joined by Walker Wildman. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. Good to be on the show today.
And Fred Jackson, news director for OneNewsNow.com.
Yes, sir. We're here on a Monday, and there's lots of news to talk about.
Lots of news. By the way, Walker Wildman is vice president of operations. I should say that as well. I cannot believe the last, since President Trump got elected, I don't think there has been a slow news day since.
Nope.
I mean, it has just been rip-roaring for, 3 years, and it's going to continue. If he's reelected, it'll continue again for another 4 years after that. So let's get us started. Well, we don't have time to waste here, Fred. We need to fill this hour and a half with all the stuff that
you just put the words Trump and rip-roaring together.
That
was a wonderful way to introduce a story from yesterday.
I wish I could claim credit for that, but completely accidental.
Daytona 500, and as far as I know, you guys can correct me, yesterday President Donald Trump became the first president to open up the race. Mm-hmm. And it actually started before the president touched down in Daytona. Air Force One, this must be... It just had to drive the Democrats crazy.
Right.
Air Force One does this low fly pass.
800 feet.
800 feet over the raceway. Thousands of people cheering. And then, of course, he and his wife eventually showed up at the race. And this is what it sounded like with the president doing that famous audio. Cut number three.
Please welcome this year's Grand Marshal, the 45th President of the United States of America, Donald J. Trump, accompanied by First Lady of the United States, Melania Trump.
Daytona International Speedway, we love our country, and it's truly an honor to be with all of you at the great American race. Gentlemen, start your engines.
And the crowd just went crazy. Now, I think they call the president's car the Beast.
Yeah.
He did a little lap around there. It kind of looks a little strange because you're used to seeing race cars, but this was the big black limousine.
Bulletproof.
Presidential security.
You know, that thing weighs, they were talking about this, that thing weighs 22,000 pounds.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The average race car weighs about 3,000 pounds.
Yeah.
And they were talking about how he can't. When he rode around the track, he couldn't get on the actual track because of the slope. The Beast might roll over. You have to go. They were saying you have to. The race cars have to stay over 70 miles an hour, even when they're just cruising, because the slope it'll bring the car down.
Huh.
And so the Beast couldn't ride on the actual track. It had to ride right beside it. I don't know what
on the just on the inside.
Yeah, on the inside, inside road.
Where it's flat and level
yeah.
or something?
Huh. Yeah.
Okay, I didn't realize it weighed that much. It doesn't surprise me because of its armor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's an armored vehicle. So yeah. I guess it doesn't surprise me. You know, I guess the plane, Air Force One, doing a low flyover at 800 feet probably wasn't much louder than those cars
as
they race. So.
No. It's amazing. And, you know, the politics of this, of course,
right.
too, is not being missed by analysts. This crowd, the NASCAR crowd,
right?
And you heard the cheering there. He was amongst friends there yesterday and supporters from across the country. I guess, you know, it was either Bernie Sanders or President Trump, and they went with President Trump on this. I can't imagine Bernie Sanders or Bloomberg. Hillary Clinton.
They generally despise these kind of people.
Well,
they make fun of them.
Exactly.
But I'm saying, you know, the flyover country, the basket of deplorables, torn shirt, you know, wearing, fried chicken eating you know, NFL watching, you know, NASCAR watching kind of folks. They don't, you know, some half of them probably farmers, and we know what like Michael Bloomberg thinks of them, which we can get to there's later. But
good transition.
Another segue.
Oh,
you are on today.
I had no idea.
Well, Michael Bloomberg keeps getting in trouble with things that he said several years ago. Maybe at that time he wasn't thinking about running for president.
I think that's the problem.
Yeah, but now he is. He is running for president. But, you know, in this day and age of everything being recorded, things are coming back to haunt him. He had the problem last week that he had apologized for things that were deemed as derogatory against black voters, black people in this country. And now someone has dug up a tape from 2016 where Michael Bloomberg was dissing farmers and factory workers.
Right.
Basically, I'll let you hear this, but insinuating that farmers, you don't really have to be very smart to be a farmer. You don't have to be really very smart to work in a factory. You imagine, I mean, right away, you see the arrogance that's coming out in this. And he said, really, the smart people are like kind of the software developers, the gurus. And he even said this phrase, and you're going to hear this, you have to have a lot of gray matter to do that kind of thing.
Right.
All right. So he's talking at this forum somewhere. I think it was a forum on jobs or what, Jobs of the Future. Anyway, here's Michael Bloomberg, cut number one.
It's a process. So you dig a hole, you put a seed in, you put dirt on top, add water, up comes the corn. Then we had 300, you could learn that. Then you have 300 years of the industrial society. You put the piece of metal on the lathe, you turn the crank and the direction of the arrow, and you can have a job. And we created a lot of jobs. Now comes the information economy. The skill sets that you have to learn are how to think and analyze. And that is a whole degree level different. You have to have a different skill set. You have to have a lot more gray matter.
You know, here's the thing. As this story kind of broke and you know, was hearing things, I started thinking about it. You know, it's obvious that people use different types of skills and abilities to do different jobs. Nobody's arguing that. Nobody's arguing that to be a farmer, you have to be intellectual about that task, that occupation, that job, like you would if you're a brain surgeon, okay? Nobody's arguing that. But it's dismissive, the way he said it, and it's insulting. Listen, I know a young couple. They're dairy farmers. They own a dairy farm here in this part of Northeast Mississippi. This guy gets, 7 days a week. This guy never takes a vacation unless somebody's there to milk his cows. It is labor intensive, but this person, these people work hard. Farming is hard work. You shouldn't, it sounds dismissive, and coming from a Democrat, it's even worse because they always seem to be dismissing people who don't go to cocktail parties with them. And he's implying that, I'm guessing that probably a lot of farmers are very smart.
Extremely smart. Well, extremely I've known smart. Some farmers.
Because they plant crops and harvest crops doesn't mean they don't have a lot of gray matter, and that's what it sounds like he was saying.
Yeah, and modern farming has always been a pretty complex thing to do because there's so many factors that go into producing a good crop. And you've got the weather, which you can't control. But then you've got the process that goes from beginning to end, from planting to harvest. That process is actually pretty complex, and there's even majors where you go to school for 4 years to learn that process. So no, I know a lot of farmers around here, and one down south of here that has thousands of acres, and when you talk to them, and I've been down there several times. The process and the technology they use to water and do things like that—it's not something to be made fun of.
And here's the thing: what is the point? I mean, if we talk about people who are in internet technology, any kind of information technology, you know, people have a tendency, they're just a bunch of nerds. You know what I'm saying? Mm. You don't have to insult people if they're in that pigeonhole,
right,
that category. And that's what it sounds like he was doing. I mean, I don't think it's any nicer for farmers to say bunch of eggheads, you know, all they do, they're all pale from being inside. They got, you know, arms like spaghetti. Okay. And the fact of the matter is people in IT or in the information technology fields, they can be in good shape too. You don't have to insult people to talk about some of the changes. And that's what he's going to have to answer for.
Yeah.
Because it's going to go right along with Hillary Clinton's basket of deplorables and all the joking around about flyover country.
Yeah.
And this is not helping the Democrats. And Michael Bloomberg has just, you know, added his name to the list of people who insult people who aren't Hollywood or New York elites.
You know, it's an interesting contrast. Bloomberg's a multi-billionaire. So is Donald Trump. But President Trump has a way that he has endeared himself to the wide spectrum of the American population. Donald Trump would never say anything like Bloomberg just said.
Right.
Or said in 2016. Because if you remember, President Trump grew up in a construction family.
Right.
And he's talked about working with the blue-collar people.
Right.
Not overseeing from ivory towers, but he's worked, and his sons talk about that kind of thing too.
They respect them.
They respect them. They appreciate what people in blue-collar jobs do.
Right.
You know, farmers, some of the most brilliant people I've met have been farmers. Because it's not just putting a seed in the soil.
That was so disrespectful.
Give me a break. I mean, today in the sophistication, they have to add certain chemicals to that because in an arid climate, that corn still has to grow.
The only thing missing from what he said was it's so easy you could train a monkey to do it.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like when he said that.
I know. Well, I tell you what, that may go over well on Madison Avenue. They can joke about it there. Or it may go over well on Rodeo Drive in Los Angeles.
But not in Wisconsin.
But not in Wisconsin.
Yeah. Right.
And these people, you know, the Bloombergs and the Hillary Clinton keep doing. By the way, there is Matt Drudge has a story this morning. We haven't heard from Matt Drudge lately. But he's saying that Bloomberg could pick Hillary Clinton as a running mate. Now, I don't know how serious that could be, but Can you imagine, given what happened in 2016, that Bloomberg would pick Hillary Clinton and that would be a team that they think they could go to the American electorate with?
Yeah, you want to talk about upsetting the base. Let's see Bernie be cheated like he was last time with the superdelegates. And then the billionaire Bloomberg picks Hillary Clinton. And she doesn't have to do any of the running and the spending millions of dollars in the primary. Right. She just gets to jump on the wagon at the latter end.
Well, we were talking about in our story meeting, Hillary Clinton is one of the most ambitious people I've ever watched. I would say ever known. I don't know her, but watched. Now, there's nothing wrong with being ambitious, and I have no problem with someone wanting to be president. But Hillary Clinton, it appears, has wanted to be president for a very, 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 very long time. Mm-hmm. And you put her that close to the presidency, vice president, okay? Michael Bloomberg is going to regret that decision because she's not a number two kind of person.
No.
She's not going to sit back doing vice presidential things, you know, opening school libraries and showing up and reading a little storybook at the the elementary school in Washington, D.C., she's going to want to be out there forming policy. She's going to be a huge headache for Michael Bloomberg. What he said about farmers and blue-collar workers is bad enough, but if he thinks this is a good idea, who wants a guy like that making decisions in the White House?
Yeah,
this is a really bad idea.
Yeah, the only way that this is going to work out for the Democrats, and I wish them well, tongue-in-cheek, is that somebody like Bloomberg, who's considered more of an establishment-type Democrat, if they pick somebody like a Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, something to energize the base, mm-hmm. because Bloomberg's not going to do it. And if he picks Hillary Clinton, that's definitely not going to do it. That's how you do a repeat of 2016. But it's going to be interesting to see how this battle between the Sanders crowd and the Biden and Bloomberg crowd plays out.
Well, you guys are great on segues today.
We're the segue kings.
I tell you what, and we didn't even practice this at all. But you mentioned you just mentioned Bernie Sanders. For the second or third time in the last few days, I've been reading stories from very left wing. I'm talking about Washington Post stories, and now the Associated Press this morning. And you can go to onenewsnow.com to read this for yourself. It's a very lengthy story. The headline is "One Thing Unites Establishment Democrats: Fear of Sanders." The Democratic Party, I don't think I'm overstating this, is a party in crisis right now. Mm-hmm. They really are. And I guess we'll call it the establishment. We'll call it the Hillary Clinton people. They understand this. Sanders is doing far better than he did in 2016. In fact, we're coming up this Saturday on the Nevada caucuses. Now, you remember just 10 days ago, everybody said, well, Joe Biden will do well there.
Right.
You know, that's Harry Reid country. That's his old buddy is in control. But the polls this morning have Sanders beating mm-hmm. Biden. So
just in a head-to-head?
That team.
Okay.
They're projecting for this the caucuses this Saturday. Right. And so then we go to South Carolina. What's happening with Biden right now is that, you know, it's kind of like a steamroller when you get bad news after bad news.
Right.
He didn't do well, as far as we know, in Iowa. Who did do well? We don't know for sure. And then you go to New Hampshire, and Biden left town before the voting was counted. And so now the others are making inroads in South Carolina. He's not doing as well as they said in Nevada. The establishment, and this story from the Associated Press that we have on our site right now deals with this. They're saying, and we're coming up very soon on Super Tuesday, where you have, at least a dozen states or even more.
Yeah, I think 40% of the delegate count on that day.
They say if Sanders comes out of Super Tuesday with a lead over the other candidates of 100 delegates, he has 100 more delegates than any other candidate, he's in danger of, according to these Democrats, of getting the nomination. He can't be stopped. And the thrust of this story this morning is they're basically calling on one of the so-called moderates. Now, the Associated Press, Washington Post, they consider Biden a moderate. They consider Klobuchar a moderate. They consider Buttigieg a moderate. They say one of those has to get out in order for one of them to start rising to the top and be a real challenger to Sanders.
Yeah.
But none of them. Certainly, Buttigieg has no intention of getting out of this race. Biden right now, Klobuchar did a great job in New Hampshire. And then there's Elizabeth Warren, who seems to be shuffling off the playing field right at the moment. So they are a party in crisis right now. They don't know what to do with Bernie Sanders because they dare not do what they did in 2016. The party kind of, they rig things. We all know that now, but they know they can't.
I would say
that.
Get ready. Now they're going to do what they can through the quote fairway in the next, 2 months, mm-hmm. But you get Bernie going into the convention with the majority of delegates. Be on the lookout for some shenanigans.
Well, and this is coming up fast, so there's almost no time for
the June.
Well, no, Super Tuesday is March 3rd. So yes,
the convention.
Oh, the convention is in July.
July
for the Democrats. The Republicans is in August. So you have a situation where this Saturday. Are the caucuses in Nevada.
Yes.
The following Saturday is
South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. And then March 3rd is Super Tuesday, which would be the Tuesday after South Carolina.
Yes.
There's 14 states on Super Tuesday. Mm. So you are talking about, what is that, a week? So let's say it's less than 2 weeks. It's like 10 days. You've got all that happening. Mm-hmm. There is no time to stop Bernie Sanders if he does well in Nevada, South Carolina, and then on Super Tuesday. There's just, there's no way to derail that in a manner that does not appear to be the establishment sticking it to Bernie Sanders again.
Right.
That's what it would look like. So you've got a situation where in South Carolina, Joe Biden has been long counting that as his possible firebreak to stop the bleeding, so to speak, because he is depending on minority voters, especially in the black community, which is, I think, a very big, large constituency, maybe majority in South Carolina. If he does not do well there, he's done.
Yeah.
He's done, because that bad news on a Saturday before the Super Tuesday vote is just going to, it's going to snowball.
Yeah.
And people who might have considered voting for Biden in those 14 states on Super Tuesday are going to go, nah, I'm not wasting my vote.
Yeah.
This is, and to your point, this is a party in crisis because they are not sure what their identity is.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, they have the, what they call the center left, which has been what they've traditionally been here the last 30, 40 years, center left. Now you get this more radical element, the socialist element,
mm-hmm.
and they're the ones with the foot soldiers and the energy.
Mm-hmm.
This is bad mojo, man.
Isn't it interesting, though, how, you know, for months we saw Biden leading the polls.
Yeah.
Even amongst Democrats, not a necessarily general election head-to-head against Trump, but you saw Biden leading the national polls against Sanders and the rest of them. But then you actually get to the day of voting, and it's the opposite of the poll results.
I think what happened is what the highlights began to run about Biden's gaffes.
Yeah.
His attacking people who spoke out against him, you know.
He didn't help himself.
He did not help himself. Right. And then there were the memory losses about where he is and all that sort of thing. And you know, the party publicly is not going to come out against him, but it starts to register with people that he is not going to do well against Donald Trump.
Well, he was up high in terms of initial poll numbers because of name recognition.
Yeah.
He was he was vice president for 8 years under President Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, has been in the Senate forever, and he had name recognition. So you put a list of candidates before people who aren't really paying attention. They go, oh yeah, Biden. Yeah, I know. I like him.
Yeah,
I like him. Yeah, the Obama years. Yeah, I like him. I would probably favor him. Well, that's fine until the debates start and campaigning starts, and people start going, ooh, no. You know, I'm going to take another look at some of these other people. I think that's what's doing him in. Now, if he turns it around and, you know, and South Carolina is a tourniquet,
mm-hmm.
and he wins South Carolina,
mm-hmm.
something dramatic like that,
mm-hmm.
Then maybe he gets a little bit of a bounce and people give him another. But it doesn't look that way mm-hmm. right now.
So, but the consequences of, let's say, you know, at the convention, Democratic convention, July, you have Bernie Sanders getting the nomination. You have a bunch of Democrats now, those that were elected in 2018, some of them have already stated this. If Bernie Sanders is at the top of that ticket, when people go in to vote, they're going to vote for Donald Trump and Republicans all the way down. That's what's going to happen.
Could be a very dramatic 2020 election.
Some people are predicting a runaway for President Trump, and the catalyst for that may be Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
Well, we're still a long way away, you know, in terms of months to go. Anything can happen. But right now, this is a party. The Democratic Party is a party in disarray.
Mm-hmm.
The establishment folks are very, very afraid of a Bernie Sanders top of the ticket. In terms of the House and the Senate, you might pick up a couple more seats in the Senate. Could you flip the House? Who knows?
All right.
Wow.
All right, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Sandy Rios.
The jackals in Washington and the media and in the various Democratic positions are guarding, and there's so many people leaking. compelling inside information. He should be able to talk to his attorney general about this stuff, but he can't even do that.
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News. Don't miss the next Today's Issues. Weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. Our June tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon is almost full. Then we've got our September trip coming up as well. And if you want to take advantage of that, we still have plenty of seats left on that one. That's September the 16th, 17th, 18th, and 19th. Our itinerary is available online at spiritualheritagetours.com, spiritualheritagetours.com. We see as much as you can possibly see in the time we're in D.C. It's a very enjoyable trip. We have great food, great people from around the country, and we have Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation as our historian. So there are just very few tours, if any at all, like our tour of our nation's capital. So if you want to go, or on the Williamsburg-Jamestown-Yorktown trip, either one of those, just go to spiritualheritagetours.com, spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes, and folks, Liberty University believes a private Christian education should be affordable to everyone. That's great, right? It doesn't matter if you're from California or Maine or anywhere in between, you may qualify for up to $20,780 over 4 years through Liberty's Middle America Scholarship. For more information, text MAS to the number 839-858 today. Again, that's MAS to the number 839-858. The nation's largest non-Catholic denomination is in trouble, and that's a big problem for America. For decades, the Southern Baptist Convention has been at the forefront of the so-called culture war. But in recent years, the convention has disengaged. And even more troubling, there's been a movement to embrace social justice, critical race theory, and never Trumpism. When Vice President Mike Pence spoke at the 2018 annual meeting of the SBC, some Baptists walked out of the room. Southern Baptist Convention President J.D. Greer recently posted a podcast calling for people to use what he called pronoun hospitality when dealing with transgender people. But now a very large group of Southern Baptist pastors and laypeople are fighting back. The Conservative Baptist Network launched today, committed to what they called a second conservative resurgence. Let's hope it works. America needs Southern Baptist. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. We thank you for joining us here on Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I'm joined in studio by Walker Wildman and Fred Jackson. Fred, just looking at our television feed that we have on screen in the news, well, the newsroom, our studio here from Fox, and they were showing images of flooding in Jackson, Mississippi, our flagship station. Even though we're in 38 states, the AFR, the American Family Radio Network, our headquarters is here in Tupelo, Mississippi, our flagship station. It's here in Tupelo, Mississippi, so 3 hours south, Jackson. I have family members in the Jackson area, my wife's side. And so potential, I mean, the governor, Tate Reeves, has declared a state of emergency. They're talking about maybe the third worst flooding in Mississippi history. What's going on here?
Well, yeah, some of the neighborhoods off of the Pearl River, which is in the Jackson area, some of those neighborhoods, people have already had to leave their homes. And we've seen pictures this morning of people in canoes and kayaks going back to check on their property. So we're at that point. And was looking at some analysis of this morning. And basically, you know, we joked last week about all the rain that we have been getting. But there are some dear folks that are really feeling some heavy-duty impact because of this. There's a, you know, the Mississippi River has a lot of tributaries and streams that flow into it. So the same rain that Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, parts of Tennessee, they've been experiencing that heavy rain also. I mean, there were four or five days last week where the rain didn't stop.
Right.
I mean, it just kept coming and kept coming in waves. So all of that is flowing into the Mississippi River. It overflows at some points, some of those tributaries, and then the Pearl River that we're talking about is now flooding its banks, and more rain is on the way.
Right.
Tonight. We, you know, some people say, well, every spring you have that problem, but the spring problem quite often stems from way up, up further north in the Mississippi where they've had a lot of snow. That hasn't started to, that snow hasn't really started to melt yet.
Right.
That's yet to come a bit later in the spring. But right now it's the unusual amount of rain that this portion of the country has had, and they're feeling the impact, not only in Jackson, Mississippi, but there was some photographs I saw this morning in Savannah, Tennessee, which is about a couple of hours' drive north of our home base here in Tupelo, Mississippi. The Tennessee River there, same kind of problem. It's flooding, and two large homes tumbled into the river over the weekend. No loss of life there. We're thankful for that. But this is a huge problem this spring, and as I said, this is not going to let up anytime soon because of the spring melt up north, which feeds into the Mississippi and these other rivers. That's yet to come.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, of course, our listeners are familiar with this. Unless you live out in the desert, I lived out in New Mexico and Arizona over the course of my life, and in those kinds of places, they don't know what we're talking about. But if you anywhere else, you know that sometimes ground just gets so saturated, there's just nowhere for it to go. Ground doesn't absorb it anymore, and your water table is way almost to the surface. And there's just nowhere for the water to go. So that is also a corresponding problem for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And when you have the continual rain,
it's just a
natural disaster in the making for Jackson and maybe other places.
Yeah,
it
has to be a bad feeling, and I haven't been there, but we're so used to being in control, especially of our environment, or at least being able to escape natural disasters to a certain extent. But flooding is one of those things. If your home is in the way of it, it's unfortunate, but there's really nothing you can do.
Well, it's just let me just give you an example of the sense that nature has its way, and doesn't matter, you know, how much technology is available. But my wife and I, we live out in the country, so we have a septic system. Okay, there's no place to hook into. We're out in the county, so and when the ground gets this wet, you know, you have the pipes that are underground, and there's nowhere for the water to go from your septic system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you have to make adjustments because that's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. The water table is down there. There's just water underground, down to 2 feet or whatever.
Yeah.
So to your point, Walker, I've never been in a situation. We have people here who work here whose homes were flooded last year.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the water just rises, and you're just not going to keep water out. Yeah. It will find a way in. And so anyway, just, you know, folks, continue to pray. You know, Mississippi is going to do what it can, and other states, I'm sure, will get hit with these kinds of things. It's been a very wet winter in this part of the country.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, we have breaking news out of Virginia this morning. The headline there is Virginia lawmakers reject assault weapon ban. Now, what's happened in the last year or so, the Democrats took control of the state of Virginia. They control everything, legislature, the governor's mansion, the whole shebang. And the governor there, Governor Northam, a very leftist Democrat.
Sure is.
I mean, he has been doing everything that he promised to do, and that is to take that state far, far to the left, including going after weapons. Well, here's what happened this morning. Four moderate Democrats, I'm reading from the Associated Press here, four moderate Democrats joined Republicans in Monday's committee vote, rejecting legislation that would have prohibited the sale of certain semi-automatic firearms, including popular AR-15-style rifles, and banned the possession of magazines that hold more than 12 rounds. Now, a little bit of background. What has happened since the Democrats there kind of featured this agenda of going after people's guns? Thousands of gun supporters from across the country descended on Virginia.
Right.
Because they saw the agenda. If it happened in Virginia, it could happen in other places. And it appears to have worked, at least for this portion of things right now, that these Democrats, and these are Democrats who I think understand their constituents a little bit better than the governor does. And they understand if they want to keep getting elected that there are folks in Virginia that may have voted Democrat, but they understand the Second Amendment too.
Yeah, right.
And they saw a real threat here. So that is a victory for gun owners this morning in Virginia. But they'll have to stay vigilant because this governor, Ralph Northam, he has an agenda and he's not going to stop.
Mm-hmm. You know, Walker, you're a hunter. Explain to our listeners, though, many of them, I have no idea what percentage, many of them understand this distinction, but this label of assault rifle, I mean, that is all that we hear when it comes to gun control folks and the leftists, you know, I was going to say the leftists in California, but the other leftists in Virginia too, in the legislature there. What are they talking about? These are semi-automatic rifles that would be banned. That's not automatic. I mean, as far as I know, machine guns are not legal anyway.
Yeah.
What does this terminology mean when leftists use it?
Well, they try to bring this military-type language into the debate, and if you look at it, there's a very minute number. On the overall gun market, there's a very minute number of actually automatic rifles, which an automatic rifle is also called an assault rifle, which is used typically in the military. You can get a automatic or fully automatic rifle, but the FBI background check and the application process is very stringent. Every one of them is recorded, and the number of people who have them is very small. I don't even know anybody who has one, put it that way. But basically what the Democrats are talking about here is anything that shoots semi-automatic, which they call AR-15s, which are just a semi-automatic rifle. You pull the trigger once, you get one shot. Pull the trigger twice, you get two shots. They call those assault rifles because they want to blend the terms, the military-type terms, into this debate to scare everyone. But if you take the position that we need to ban semi-automatic rifles, well, then we need to also ban semi-automatic pistols, which are very popular. So it's definitely a slippery road. And, you know, the Democrats have often tried to say, well, you know, you can keep your hunting rifles. Well, why is it the government's job to tell me which guns I can keep and which guns I can't?
Right.
You know?
Because you have not committed, I have guns too, but
yeah.
You have not committed a crime.
Right.
Why should the government be taking things away from you or preventing you from buying something?
Yeah.
Because you have not committed a crime. So this is it's kind of an age old debate, but it heats up whenever you have killings, murders,
and
mass
shootings. The thing is, it's all the whole premise of the argument is built on a falsehood, and that is that it's the inanimate objects problem.
Right.
That it's the guns problem, but it's not. I mean, we have people who use vehicles to murder people, people who use knives, bats. You got all kind of weapons out there.
Right.
And to think that somehow we're going to start confiscating guns and things are going to get better. Ask Europe how that's gone. Ask Chicago how that's gone. It hasn't gone very well.
All right. So anyway, good for the Virginia legislature. Now, you mentioned, Fred, four moderate Democrats joined Republicans. All they've done is table the bill, shelve the bill until next year.
Yes.
So this is going to come back up, I guess, depending. I'm not sure how Virginia's legislature is elected, if it's on a regular election year or if it's an off year. So I don't know if it's possible that the legislature will change control in 2020. I don't know. But we'll find out. And I'm glad that this was shelved, even if it's for just a year.
You know, it's your dad, Walker, has said this many times. Elections have consequences.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the radical agenda of most of the Democrats in Virginia, and we've talked about this before, we talked about a divide in the Democratic Party. There's a divide in Virginia. Northern Virginia has mostly federal government workers who commute every day into D.C.,
the vast majority probably Democrats.
Vast majority and leftist Democrats.
Yes.
Probably the Bernie Sanders type Democrats that live in that area of Virginia. Not everybody up there, but for the most part. I think it's Interstate 66 that runs out there, that corridor.
Okay.
You know. But then in the southern part of Virginia, a whole different group of people. When mm-hmm. you're talking about, you know, Richmond and further down in Virginia, you're talking a lot of folks, rural folks who like hunting and that sort of thing. So, you know, you've got that kind of divide, but I think it's sometimes it's good to see what, when you put radicals in power, what's going to happen. They are going to force their agenda forward.
Right.
I mean, they passed, the Democrats was it last week, their ERA, Equal Rights Amendment.
Right. Yeah.
And they're trying to push that forward. So, yeah, elections have consequences. Well, switch back now to federal politics for a few moments.
I'm sorry, I wasn't able to get a good segue from guns to this because I'm not quite sure what story you got coming up. But
well, I one of the presidential candidates who is doing very well is former mayor Pete Buttigieg. And conversations that have taken place pretty much off microphone about his homosexuality. Now, he hasn't tried to hide it.
Right.
He calls his husband, is out there.
Chasten, I think is his name.
Is out there with him. Well, last week, Rush Limbaugh opened his microphone and made some comments about this. And Sebastian Gorka, likewise. So, Pete Buttigieg was on with Chris Wallace this past weekend. Chris Wallace plays a couple of clips, Limbaugh and Sebastian Gorka, publicly mentioning Buttigieg's homosexuality. And Chris Wallace asked Buttigieg to respond. It's going to be cut number 7.
A gay guy, 37 years old, loves kissing his husband on debate stages. Can you see Trump have fun with that?
Why is a homosexual man lecturing us about the sanctity of life in the womb? Just a little curious there. Strange.
Mayor, what's your reaction to those comments?
Well, I am in a faithful, loving, committed marriage. I'm proud of my marriage. And I'm proud of my husband. And I'm not going to be lectured on family values from the likes of Rush Limbaugh or anybody who supports Donald J. Trump as the moral as well as political leader of the United States. America has moved on, and we should have a politics of belonging that welcomes everybody. That's what the American people are for.
Has America moved on? That's the question. Has America moved on? And what he's saying there, America is accepting of homosexuality and homosexual marriage. I'm not sure of that.
Well, I would say this. All the polling clearly shows that the electorate, well, those who are polled, have completely flipped over about a 20-year period. They are in favor. They do no longer think, and when I'm talking like 60-30. It used to be 60-30, homosexual relationships are not moral. Now it's 60-30, they are. The majority of people support same-sex marriage. Since 2015, since the Supreme Court ruling in Obergefell, which we've always said here, laws and Supreme Court rulings change people's minds. That's just what they do. Most people now believe that homosexuals are born that way. The polling indicates that the people have, in a sense, moved on the subject of homosexuality. The majority of people say they would vote for a homosexual as president. But, okay, having said all that, that's what people tell pollsters.
Yes.
Okay. I do not think at this point, maybe another 5 years, maybe 10 years, this wouldn't be true. I do not think that the majority of people who might answer those questions to Gallup are going to want to see two men kissing on stage, on, you know, the Democratic National Committee stage or at White House events. I don't think the American people are ready for that kind of physicality, but that's what you'd get.
Yeah,
Pete Buttigieg was president.
Yeah, you know, if anybody thinks what I'm thinking, I think it's disgusting to see that on national television, but this is all about the normalization of that behavior, and we've seen it. This is not a new fight. We've been seeing this for decades. My grandfather fought it in a different way. Not as it wasn't as bad then as it is now in the 70s, but we all saw where this was coming to. But yeah, I think the theoretical, like a poll question, the hypothetical rather, I think that's a little different animal than the real life, the real thing on national television. When people see that two men kissing, I just don't think, like you're saying, and I just don't think the voters are at a point where they're going to say, yeah, that's great, let's go for that.
Yeah.
Because not everybody thinks like we do and that it's a sin, but still, it's unnatural. And I think right. that's kind of the instinct that people go towards, at least some people.
Well, and Mayor Pete Buttigieg, South Bend, Indiana mayor, he's talked about he and his quote-unquote husband. As I said on the show last week, they're not married.
No.
That's not what marriage is. Marriage is only the joining of a man and a woman.
Yeah.
The two separate genders of the human race coming together. So they're not married, but I understand that in terms of the opinion of the government, they are. So that's why I say quote-unquote. He's talked about them having children, adopting. And so does the American electorate want to see not only these two men kissing on a regular basis and holding hands? I saw pictures last week of the two of them sitting on a swing and then adopting children.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be part of the issue that when people go into the kind of the sanctity of the voting booth,
yes,
and they have to make that decision without NBC News pointing a camera at them or Gallup asking them a question,
yeah,
that's going to be the question. And at this point, I do not think that a homosexual man can win.
Also, you have to talk about the topic of religious liberty. And, you know, how can he be a good arbiter of religious and the understanding of the Constitution when he's engaging in that kind of behavior, you know, because the Democrats, for the most part, they don't like people like Jack Phillips, Baronel Stutzman. They don't like people like AFR because we hold a biblical view of marriage. And that would be another area where he would no doubt be conflicted on the issue of religious liberty.
Yeah. And I actually don't think there'd be much conflict. I think Pete Buttigieg, like the rest of the Democrats, would, without batting an eye, take away our religious liberty in favor of sexual liberty.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, it's whatever they want to do is fine, but you can't talk about it. I would fully expect, as I did if Hillary Clinton if Hillary Clinton had won in 2016, that we would be in danger at AFR of losing licenses for our radio network.
Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, Buttigieg has already been expressed hostile words towards Christians. Remember, he attacked Vice President Pence's wife,
right,
for teaching at a Christian school. And, you know what was behind that attack.
Absolutely.
So make no secret, and walk to Walker's point, I think religious freedoms would be in jeopardy.
Right.
If you had a open homosexual in the White House. I just don't think America's ready for that. And I agree with you guys. It's kind of like when Americans are asked about transgenderism.
Right.
You know, they're going to say to the pollster, and if the camera's in front of them, they're going to say, well, you know, we have to respect people's feelings, that kind of thing. But we're already seeing a backlash against that when you have guys who say they're girls and want to compete against females.
And see, to me, that's the difference. I think Americans, generally speaking, they do not want people being picked on. Mm. Okay, so they don't want homosexuals being picked on. They don't want transgender individuals being picked on. Nobody wants them, you know, shoved in lockers or their heads put in toilets or any of those kinds of things that probably have happened. Mm-hmm. I think most Americans are fair that way. They do have a kind of a live and let live philosophy of life. But when it invades into the real world, like with these transgender, I always get confused on, I guess they would be transgender girls, which are actual boys.
Yeah.
Claiming to be girls, when they run races and beat girls who have trained their whole lives and go to the state championship instead of the girl, Americans don't like that either.
No.
And so that's the kind of thing where you, where Americans start to go, no, wait a second, I don't want them beat up, but it's not right for them to play sports against girls.
Yeah.
But all of this, you know, goes to what we've talked about. Every election is pivotal, but I think the election this year, even more so, when you look at, you know, Bernie Sanders is doing extremely well, far communist.
Right.
Most people, you know, doing really well. Pete Buttigieg is doing well in the votes so far. So you've got America, I think, at a crossroads this fall. It really is. Well, we know where Donald Trump stands on these issues and what he's done. But when you look at these individuals who are rising to the top in amongst Democrats, at least some Democrats, that's pretty scary.
Yeah, I think the political divide is so evident that every election is going to be critical. Mm. I mean, I think, and I don't think that's an overstatement. I mean, maybe we'll get desensitized to it after calling every election critical, you know, for 10, 20 years. But I think both sides are so far apart that one or the other wins, it does drastically change the direction of the country.
Yeah.
And so, you know, at times it used to be where both parties, they had different positions, but they really weren't that far off to a certain extent. Maybe on some issues they were, but now we are at a point where they're so far apart.
Well, and I'll say this. I use this example on a number of occasions, so some of our listeners have heard it before. Forgive me, but President Abraham Lincoln, when the country was split between pro-slavery and anti-slavery people, Abraham Lincoln said, the country cannot continue like this. It's got to be all one thing or all the other. You can't, a nation divided against itself, cannot, a house divided cannot stand. Mm-hmm. Because slavery and anti-slavery are mutually exclusive. You can't be partly in favor of slavery. You can't be partly against it. You're either for the sale of human beings or you're against it. And I think we are coming up on a time in this country that is very similar. So I would agree with what Walker is saying, that we have two mutually exclusive ways of looking at life. Mm. You're either for God and religious liberty, or you're against that. You can't be partially against religious liberty when it comes to areas of like human sexuality. So the country's going to have to be all one thing or all another. We're either going to return to God and the Christian foundations of this nation, or we're going to become like Europe. We're going to become secular, and if you're a Christian, you ride the back of the bus.
Yeah.
And if we want to take away your rights, we will. Mm. And I think that's where we're coming. That's why it's back and forth here as people elect a different party to run the country, because these are mutually exclusive ways of looking at life.
Mm-hmm. All right, coming up in news time, just one more story here on this President's Day. Some of our listeners have today off because of that. The story out of California, school erases former president's name and replaces it with Michelle Obama. A school in Northern California, K through grade 6, West Contra Costa Unified School, are getting rid of Woodrow Wilson's name on their school and replacing it with Michelle Obama. They say, according to the Parent Teachers Association, they think Michelle Obama is the kind of symbol that relates most now to these younger students. So they're going to change the name of that school to Michelle Obama School rather than Woodrow Wilson.
Well, my own personal opinion is I would have thought better of this change if they had changed it to the name of Barack Obama, who was actually president.
Yeah.
You know, now I don't think he was a good president. I'm not a Woodrow Wilson fan either, but putting Michelle Obama's name on there is just patently absurd.
Yeah.
You know, she was first lady, maybe a fine woman. But anyway, folks, we're going to take a 5-minute break for news and we'll be back. Please join us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.